We're live from the studio. It is actually usually when I post the radio show, it is at it's usually Friday afternoon or even Saturday morning. This week, I just got later and later because I was playing games with technology. I mean, you know, you don't care because, of course, you're listening to this whenever you're listening to this. But I try to keep on a schedule, and I got way behind playing games with technology, and things don't work the way they're supposed to. And so in an effort to make it sound better, that was what I was up to, and it took me all day. And now I am I just made the best tacos I've had in ages. Oh, they were so good. I had about 10 of them. They were so good. So here I am with my giant fat belly after eating the tacos with the gluten-free tortillas, got my coffee, ready to listen to this week's Bob Davis podcast radio show, which I have entitled "The Russians Are Coming. The Russians Are Coming. The Russians Are Coming." Here is segment one of this week's Bob Davis podcast radio show. Welcome to the Bob Davis podcast radio show. For all the podcasts, go to thebobdavispodcasts.com. Welcome to the Bob Davis Podcast Radio Show. In this show, by the time you hear this, you're probably poring over the unclassified data from the U.S. intelligence agencies, quote, proving that, quote, the Russians hacked the U.S. election. You're hip deep in that information, no doubt, dog-earing the pages of that report. Well, that's the headline. A skeptical President-elect Trump got a briefing Friday afternoon from the Director of National Intelligence, among others. And I'm going to talk about the elements of this story in this show because this is a very important moment in the current time frame, at least in terms of election 2016 and the next 3-4 months and the past 3 or 4 months. What does Russia hacks U.S. election actually mean to you? By the way, that's not an actual headline. That's my amalgamation or consolidation of headlines because the subconscious message there is our democracy is not our own. We're being manipulated. Did the Russians hack voting machines and manipulate data? Because that would be what I would think of as a Russian hack of the U.S. election system. How does that compare to voter fraud and voter suppression efforts, regardless of which side of the political spectrum they came on throughout the history of U.S. elections? Because we have seen it again and again and again, and not just currently, but throughout the 20s and 30s and 40s and in the past century or so. Allegation has been that actors tied to the Russian government used a spear phishing scheme to get into Clinton's campaign chair, John Podesta's email. That is when they send an email to somebody that tricks them into clicking on it, entering their password, and then they can infect an entire system. Once John Podesta answered an email or clicked on the spear phishing email, then malware was able to be used to infect the entire DNC system. This was not Hillary Clinton's private server, as I originally was confused about. The information became public through WikiLeaks. The question is, who gave it to WikiLeaks, right? Did the Russians get it and then give it to WikiLeaks? Well, we don't know. And I'm not sure we ever will know. But more importantly, setting aside for a moment the question of who hacked the DNC system, did the information given to WikiLeaks actually influence this election? Well, how would you know? Did people vote in slightly larger numbers for Trump in Ohio and Michigan and Florida and Pennsylvania and North Carolina and Iowa because of the Clinton emails? Or did Trump receive slightly higher vote totals in America's so-called Rust Belt if you don't count Florida and North Carolina because people were upset about higher Obamacare premiums or that they have not been able to get a better job than the one they lost in 2011 or really any job, or because they felt abandoned by the political party that was traditionally, quote, for the people, the Democratic Party, that ignored the workers in favor of elite donors and those associated with the inside the Beltway crowd, right? Well, Bernie Sanders thinks that that is what happened, and we're going to talk about that in this show. And putting aside for another minute the question of who hacked the DNC emails, how is it possible that the chairman of a major political party's presidential campaign could be so stupid as to have password as his password, or to respond to a spear phishing hack campaign with his email password, considering the sensitive nature of what he was doing for Hillary Clinton? He was her campaign manager. Moreover, considering some of the content of the emails, no matter where they came from, would you think the alleged hack by the Russians could be considered a public service? I mean, that's really mean, but, and I'm also going to talk a little bit about how difficult it is to prove an actor is behind a hack, any actor, state or otherwise. The media coverage of this story, which is now at the level of the 9/11 conspiracy theories, is also a factor. And it's been fast and furious this week. You know, we go through these periods of time where we're in a high, you know, high, what do I usually call that? I have to remember, you know, an active news environment, and then it seems boring. So when I'm looking at news day to day to put on the show or do podcasts with, sometimes I just go, ah, there's nothing new. It's the same back and forth nonsense, especially in the commentariat where people are writing columns that say this and people are writing columns that say that. And I look at this, at all of this, especially now that we're back into an active cycle. And why are we back into an active cycle? We're back into an active cycle because the U.S. intelligence community, and I'm going to talk about this in this show as well, the U.S. intelligence community has testified and has issued a report, and now they're about to issue another report, or they've issued another report, and by the time you hear the show, you're reading it, or you're not reading it, but you're sitting there watching coverage of this report and coverage of what people said and how they said it and who says what and who thinks what. You know, what is this all obscuring? Because that's another question, because prior to this kind of thing breaking, and it started to break late in the week with the testimony of James Clapper in front of a Senate Foreign Relations Committee. And let me say very quickly, because I'll say it again during this show, but I'm going to say it very quickly here at in the first segment, a foreign government attempting to influence a U.S. election, while it is not unprecedented, is serious. And yes, the Foreign Relations Committee should take it up. And yes, the president, the new president, President Trump, who is currently the president-elect, should encourage these hearings. My feeling is that they will probably go away once he becomes president, because it certainly doesn't help his credibility as president, which may in fact be the intent of the hack to begin with, regardless of who did it. But all of this obscures the fact that the new Congress is getting very busy to start to handle some of the things that they, quote unquote, promised the American people that they would do. They promised that there would be a repeal of Obamacare. At first, it sounded like the beginning of this last week that was going to get done right away. Right? And now Paul Ryan is starting to say, well, we'll probably get it done this year, as various people, including Rand Paul, say you can't repeal it if you don't replace it with something. So once you start talking about replacement, then you get into the politics of health care once again. So this story is obscuring a lot of what's going on. The other thing is that the Republicans are about to pass a law that allows them to repeal in one fell swoop a whole bunch of Obama regulations. And that is why you are starting to see some congressmen make speeches about the onerous amount of U.S. regulation and the need to repeal it without being specific about what rules they want to see repealed, because Congress is fixing to basically pass a law that says we can just in bulk just get rid of it, right? And then finally, we have the question of whether or not anyone should believe the U.S. intelligence community anyway, and what the intelligence community does, who they work for, and what the new president should do about it, and Congress should do about the structure of U.S. intelligence going forward. You know, this is a far-flung, you know, group of many, many different agencies, 17, 16, depending on who you talk to, you know, all of the great, all the Pentagon agencies, lots of agencies in the U.S. intelligence community. They all work for the president. What do they do? What should the intelligence structure of the United States look like going forward? Finally, as a disclaimer, and very quickly, I just want to say that we've all seen pieces of information that we didn't want to believe turn out to be true. And I'm not saying that the quote-unquote Russian hack is true. I'm not saying it had any effect on the election one way or the other, but I know if you come from one particular side of the political spectrum, you want to believe this is not true or true. Certainly healthy skepticism is valuable on both sides of this, both with the people who believe it's true and those who don't believe it's true. I think, personally, I think the whole thing is a big manipulation, and I will talk about that a little bit in this show. And I think that the real question ought to be, what are we going to do to set ourselves up for the kind of government that really helps small business in general and technology flourish in the future, which will truly make America great? Because this discussion is obscuring a discussion about that. Coming up, Bernie Sanders says the Democrats lost because they're out of touch. Is he right? Next. This is the Bob Davis Podcast Radio Show. So when it is cold, it's super cold right now, and when it's 4 below or 5 below or 10 below, I always want to wash my car. And I, you know, there's a whole group of people on one side of the fence that say you should never wash your car when it's below zero. There's another group that, like me, who say you should because it stays clean, because you don't have all of that crap on the ground that's all thawed, that sprays up in the car, and you wash it and it's dirty within an hour and a half. But when it's super cold, it's not like that. And I love that. And it makes me think about xgovernmentcars.com and how many Crown Vicks I've had over the years that I washed in the cold weather. I had a 2000 Crown Vic, and then I had a 2003 Crown Vic. The 2000 was a two-toned cop car, and then the 2003 was a sheriff's car that was black with tinted glass. It was really awesome. And now I got a 2007, which I'm hanging on to and keeping in a garage and keeping clean. They all came from ex-government cars, Minnesota's only dealer specializing in one-owner, professionally maintained government fleet cars, trucks, and SUVs. And they have a lot of services that are really handy. First of all, if you need a car and you need a loan and you have a job, you can get approved for credit. And of course, ex-government cars takes trades. I've seen them pay the highest values every day without all the bull. Ed does it all the time. Don't forget the 3-day love it guarantee exclusively at X Government Cars. So here's what you do. Go online at xgovernmentcars.com. Check out the selection. They've got Yukons, Expeditions if you're into four-wheel drive. They also have the Dodge Chargers, which are awesome. They have the Ford Police SUVs, the Ford Police sedans that are brand new, Crown Vicks while they last. Did I mention the Yukons and the Expeditions and other kinds of SUVs? They're all there at xgovernmentcars.com. So here's what you do. You go online, you check out the selection, and then get your butt down to X Government Cars. They're now open in Golden Valley at 2420 Nevada Avenue North. You can call them at 763-777-8782. Let me grab the bullhorn. Oh, it's hard to bend over after eating all those tacos.
XGovernmentCars.com.
Okay, here's segment two of this week's Bob Davis Podcasts radio show. The Russians are coming. You're listening to the Bob Davis Podcast Radio Show. For more of the Bob Davis Podcast and to sign up for the Bob Davis Podcast newsletter, you go to the BobDavisPodcasts.com. Welcome back. So as you dog-ear the pages of the now unclassified report on the Russian hacking of the U.S. election, keep in mind there's quotes all through that, meaning that they're scare quotes. Let's put aside for a moment the evidence linking Russian intelligence to hacking the DNC servers, and we'll talk politics just a little bit. So election 2016 in the United States represented at least, I think, a tectonic shift in our politics, both the way that they're conducted and what they mean and how people are reached and how people react to things in elections. Even if Hillary Clinton had managed an electoral victory over Donald Trump, you would still say that at least he achieved a tectonic shift in the way politics in this country was conducted, and politics would have been changed forever, regardless of the outcome, electorally or in terms of the popular vote. Now, I don't want to talk too much about this, and I don't want to belabor this too much, because it becomes tedious with me talking about how much I've traveled in the last year. But okay, I'll do it one more time. I toured this country, really the whole country, in 2016. I covered the Republican primary races. I tried to get to some Democrat stuff, but I never could find a Bernie Sanders rally, and I never could connect up with a Clinton rally, such as they were. But I got to witness the candidates and the media do their work close up. So whether it was, you know, standing 5 feet in front of Scott Walker when he announced his candidacy, which was, you know, on a very hot June day in 2015, to shouting questions at Senator Ted Cruz as he boarded his campaign bus. He was very unhappy about that. Or standing next to Carly Farina when she climbed onto a chair in a cafe in Iowa and Richard Dreyfuss was there, which was really weird. To standing in the back of, you know, the bank of cameras and microphones, you know, in a room at these pre-produced, tightly controlled political events in which the media never talked to the candidates or anyone in the campaigns, but they talked to people in the audience, and that's all you got. But there was also the driving on back roads and seeing homemade Trump signs, rolling through Michigan's Upper Peninsula and seeing small town America, especially in the Rust Belt, but it wasn't just the Rust Belt or the Great Lakes region. It was the West, from the tip of southern Florida all the way out to the Northwest and Seattle and California. And I got the sense that people in not necessarily fully rural places, but in medium-sized cities all over the United States had some different ideas about politics than what I was hearing on the campaign trail and what we were seeing on television and in the commentariat analysis of things. One of the things that came through loud and clear on those trips and through my work, there are a lot of people that politics had forgotten in 2016 and 2014 and 2015, and they feel disenfranchised. They don't feel politicians in their state capitals or Washington actually care or hear them. They do not have 3 degrees from expensive universities. They are not part of a network of doctors, lawyers, CEOs, and government advisors with six-figure incomes, and they're really pissed off. Really pissed off. And I use those terms because that is exactly, some people on some radio stations won't like using that term, but they are pissed off. And some of them made Bernie Sanders their champion. Some of them thought Ted Cruz was the guy, and some of them made Donald Trump their champion. I never got the feeling that there was much affinity in terms of making Hillary Clinton the champion of the so-called little guy. Now, just this week, Bernie Sanders said the Democrats are not listening to the people. Now, I like Bernie. I don't agree with his politics, but I like Bernie Sanders because he tends to be honest, like Donald Trump, when it comes to his dealings with the public and how he talks about things. I don't know what goes on behind the scenes, but I'm talking about the presentation of political stimulus to the people through the media. Bernie said Hillary Clinton, rather than get out and deal with people, spent all her time with big money donors and Washington insiders. She didn't go to Michigan to campaign until after the primary. She didn't campaign enough in Iowa. She didn't campaign enough in Wisconsin. And by the way, I believe Republicans in general are also not listening to the people. Most of these operatives think their constituents are essentially the great unwashed. And they are, but this time many of them perhaps inexplicably voted. And the people who supported Hillary Clinton, at least in those key electoral states and in the counties outside of these urban islands of left-wing dominance, like Ramsey County and Hennepin County and Minneapolis and St. Paul, or Cook County in Illinois, or Los Angeles County, outside those urban islands, they either supported Clinton in a lukewarm fashion or they just didn't show up at the polls on election day. And you can say that about Ohio, and you can say it about Pennsylvania, and you can say it about Michigan and Wisconsin. And across this bubble of political reality is a sheen called, and I have to put this in quotes, "the Russians hacked the U.S. election," unquote. Well, which do you think is more significant in all of this? A political reality in which normal, everyday people feel more and more disenfranchised and ignored by the Washington elite, or the theory that the Russians hacked the U.S. election? Now, Bernie Sanders doesn't like Donald Trump, right? Bernie Sanders doesn't like Republicans, right? And as I said, I generally don't agree with Sanders' politics and approach to government, but I give him a great deal of credit this week for telling the truth about the Democratic Party, that the Democrats are not listening to everyday people. I think Joel Kotkin calls them, what's the word? Gentry liberals, people who are highly educated with very large, incomes, whether they're lawyers or they work for the government and they have six-figure salaries as some commissioner for some council somewhere. This is the crust in general of most of the people who are running Democrat politics. And Bernie Sanders all along resisted that and got out and dealt with people. And that's why Democrats loved him so much. And that's why people who normally wouldn't particularly listen to someone like an independent, quote unquote, socialist, self-identified Democratic socialist, really gave him a chance because he connected with people. And on the Republican side, this is what Trump was able to do with Republicans. Now, why do I bring this up? I bring this up because we're being told now by the media and all the experts that the outcome of the election was decided by this quote-unquote Russian hack, which remains unproven, of the U.S. quote-unquote election system, and that they hacked the U.S. election when they're not considering the final step in that evidence, which is to prove that people voted a certain way because of certain information which came from the results of this quote-unquote hack, whether it was the Russians or someone else. So we have to talk a little bit about how all this works and why proving it is difficult and why and how digital stuff like this actually works and how difficult it is to actually find a smoking gun, which oddly enough is very similar to the smoking gun that was never found concerning the Iraqis. And we'll talk about it. So that is all coming up. Again, the Russians hacked the U.S. election. That's what they're saying. And they made Donald Trump president. Well, that's the allegation. Why proving it is going to prove to be difficult, if not impossible. Next. This is the Bob Davis Podcasts radio show. We're bound to wait all night. She's bound to run amok. Invested in nothing at any height. To each his own. The garden's sorting out. She curls her lips on a bow. I don't know if you're dead or not. If you ain't. Just ahead of segment three of this week's Bob Davis Podcast radio show, you know, we have a digital sponsor package here at the BobDavisPodcast.com. And of course, Alpha Systems. It's affordable. It's great. And Alpha Systems has been a client for a long time. If you're a pilot and you want to be safe on takeoffs and landings, then you should look into Alpha Systems' revolutionary angle of attack indicator. The bottom line with Alpha Systems is Alpha Systems AOA saves lives because it is a fabulous visual indicator of the amount of lift your wing is producing. It's so important on the final turn. Click on the Alpha Systems banners for more info about Alpha's revolutionary angle of attack indicator at thebobdavispodcast.com. Okay, here's segment three of this week's Bob Davis Podcast radio show. The Russians are coming. Aren't you concerned? The Russians are coming. The Russians are coming. You're listening to the Bob Davis Podcast radio show. To hear more of the Bob Davis Podcasts, visit thebobdavispodcasts.com. Welcome back. First, I've been looking at the latest missive from the U.S. intelligence community, which you can get a full copy of at Mother Jones Magazine online. And there's a lot of circumstantial connections. They did this, which means that, but not a lot of specifics involving how they did what they did. And I will do a podcast about this report in the near future. But first of all, foreign involvement in U.S. political processes is nothing new. Foreign involvement in presidential politics is not anything new. In fact, it was mentioned in The Federalist and offered at least as one supporting argument for buttressing the process of the indirect election of U.S. presidents through the Electoral College. It is also true that early Americans competed with Russia and Britain and France for the territories of the Louisiana Purchase. They competed in California and the American Northwest. Britain and France figured prominently in the diplomatic machinations of the Confederate States of America, as well as the United States during the Civil War. Even respected historian Barbara Tuchman wrote a whole book about Britain's subterfuge to convince President Wilson to enter World War I. You know, U.S. industrial interests were involved in Germany and Japan prior to World War II, and the isolationist movement, whether infiltrated by German and Japanese interests or not, served to support the idea that we, the United States, would maintain our neutrality against Axis aggression. From the 1920s on, the Soviet Union influenced U.S. politics through the promotion of communism. In the Depression, many Americans and pundits believed the Soviets had solved the problems of industrialization, and while we were allied during World War II, almost everybody alive today is aware of the attempts by the Soviets, first discredited and then proven, to influence American politics during the so-called Cold War. While the digital world can be foreboding and confusing, digital really is only a system to allow for the same kinds of actions that you would take that used to take place in a non-digital world. Digital advertising, for example, is simply advertising delivered over the internet. So any involvement, by the way, by a foreign government in a U.S. election is a serious thing. It should be taken seriously. I've already talked about the dubious claim that the DNC emails affected the outcome of the U.S. election. This new report clearly states that there was no hacking of voting machines and so forth. But what about the question of proving conclusively that this election was influenced or it was hacked by the Russians and they gave it to Trump because they wanted Trump to win? Well, I've learned one thing doing this all these years, and that is this: never say never. It could be true, even if some of us don't like the implications that the Russians hacked the U.S. election and put in some Manchurian candidate to be the president. But we also remember the claims about the Iraqi weapons of mass destruction and the chemical trucks, which had allegedly come from Syria and so on. Many people wanted to believe those statements. Some refused to believe them and said, "Where's the smoking gun?" And they were pilloried by the right in this case. Well, where's the smoking gun in this case? Russian officials celebrating a Trump win, that's a smoking gun, or Russia putting a TV show on that helps Trump, or, you know, having a bunch of trolls online. There were a lot of people in the United States, including officials, celebrating a Trump win, too. There are certainly a lot of Democrat trolls online. It is a fact that the DNC refused to turn their servers over to the FBI and instead hired a private security firm to conduct a forensic analysis of those servers. CrowdStrike found evidence of two hacking groups allegedly involved or controlled by Russian intelligence. Two other security firms, Symantec and FireEye, have endorsed CrowdStrike's conclusions. So, you know, whether you're looking at the 13-page assessment, which initially was released from the intelligence community and didn't include these conclusions, or the DHS report, which also included several pages of advice for IT managers, which turned out to be nonsense, like suggesting the kinds of malware that were used actually showed up on Yahoo and so forth. Do these things prove that it was the Russians? Restating those conclusions don't necessarily prove that it was the Russians either. And as we work through the pages of the latest report, one is reminded, it is reported that this kind of forensic work really relies on connections and probabilities between intent and opportunity to circumstantial evidence to prove such and such is true, more so than you would normally find, and there probably won't be a smoking gun that would be irrefutable evidence in a court of law. Now, they're saying Putin ordered it, which gives it a sort of velocity in the media. It doesn't matter how many of these kinds of documents are released. Proving it is going to be very difficult, and also disproving it, right? Now, there are some things that are true. Clearly, DNC operatives did not follow security measures in their conduct of business. Clearly, DNC operatives, including the chairman of Clinton's campaign, shared things through email. Most middle managers at corporations in this country already know not to share. If you want examples, they aren't limited to the Sony hack a few years ago that revealed Hollywood Denison saying the crudest things and using racial epithets so much that the head of Sony Pictures was fired. Remember that? And you would think that someone with as finely tuned an intellect as John Podesta would know better. There were also attempts, by the way, to hack the RNC servers, but these failed because proper security measures were put into effect. The president-elect now has the same classified report the president has on this topic. As his intelligence people go through it, we are going to see iteration after iteration of new conclusions drawn, and we'll see how the new president, by the way, Trump was just certified by Congress this past Friday, responds to it. If the Russians did it, what was their intent? To sow distrust in the American political system and cause all of us to lose faith in our government. That was their intent. This has been the intent of Russia Today, a television network that is repeatedly cited by various news sources without any qualification, and incidentally, a network that has paid some of Trump's advisors and some of prominent Democrats as well. It's a network which repeatedly gives airtime to so-called fake news and conspiracy theories, which has been propagandist from day one. If this was their intent, then in fact the Democrats and especially the president have helped that effort by quote unquote exposing this terrible sin against Hillary Clinton and alleging helping of Donald Trump, which may or may not help the Russians because, of course, Trump is for pumping more American oil and a number of other things, and very hard to pin him down. So, perhaps this is one of those situations where you would say to the Russians, be careful what you pray for. You just might get it. Again, I am seeing these allegations and I'm seeing in this report, and I haven't read the whole thing in detail, but I'm seeing all these connections that we believe and we say and we believe. And it really does remind me of the so-called Iraqi weapons of mass destruction argument in which there was no real proof. And if you go through this, you're going to hear people on the right and people in the Trump campaign saying, this doesn't prove anything. And you will hear iterations of that. And then you will hear Democrats saying, yes, it does, and no, it doesn't, and so on. So we're never really going to get to the bottom of this. So think about this as you listen to these breathless news reports this weekend about Trump's reaction and what the unclassified report has to say, or as I call it, the unclassified classified report has to say. How much, and I'll ask these questions of myself, how much do I know about digital security? And the answer is not much. How much do I know about hacking? And the answer is not much. How do I know the DNC emails caused anyone to change their votes? I think, first of all, I don't. And second of all, I think proving that would be extraordinarily difficult. I don't know anyone that changed their vote because of the email hacks from the DNC in those key states in the Great Lakes region that I predicted would actually show the outcome of this election. And even after the fact, people's memories are shady. So it's hard to say whether it influenced anybody one way or the other. And I think it's really important to remember that in general, in politics in this country, people still vote on party lines with some minor changes with independents every now and then. So proving something like this influenced voters is highly dubious, no matter how much quote-unquote proof is offered. So now the question is, do we need a shakeup in the U.S. intelligence structure? That's going to be a question on the front burner next. This is the Bob Davis Podcasts radio show. Just ahead of segment four for this week's Bob Davis Podcast radio show. all of us digital media people, we all have these things we have to do because we have to tell people where to find the podcasts or the videos. And you see it all the time on YouTube. You see it, you know, you hear it in podcasts and everything else. And it gets tedious when I put it at the end of the podcast. So I move it around so it just doesn't get that tedious. You know, we're available at iTunes, been available at iTunes since the start of the Bob Davis podcast back in 2009. I think it was August of 2009 from the apartment in Uptown where everything was happening, right, with the windows open. It's great. We're also on Stitcher.com, which we added because Android phones didn't get at the time. I put everything up in the Apple AAC standard, and that doesn't work. So now we're posting MP3s at Stitcher.com, also iTunes and TuneIn and BlogTalkRadio.com. And thanks for liking and sharing and favoriting and following the Bob Davis podcasts on Facebook and Twitter. I really appreciate the subscriptions right off the page at the Bob Davis podcasts and on Instagram as well at the Bob Davis Podcast. And thanks for your donations at thebobdavispodcast.com for Mobile Podcast Command, which is thankfully parked. It's super clean and parked in a heated garage. Thanks to my friend Mike. Thanks to all of you for the donations and the help. That money goes right into the fund for diesel fuel for the next mission for Mobile Podcast Command. More about that later. Okay, the Russians are coming, and we want to get back to segment four of this week's Bob Davis Podcast Radio Show. Here we go. You're listening to the Bob Davis Podcast Radio Show. For all the podcasts, go to thebobdavispodcasts.com. Well, how's the reading of the unclassified classified report from the Office of U.S. Intelligence coming? Or are you listening to the radio or watching your favorite cable news network for the truth about the Russian hack of the U.S. election? Or hanging on every word coming out of Trump Tower or the White House on this thing? Or the latest babbling from senators and congressmen about what we should be doing about this terrible thing that has been done? Now, I look at this report and I think, first of all, there's a lot of things being said, but I'm still dubious about the quote-unquote proof. But then again, maybe I'm a little biased on that front because I was not a fan of Hillary Clinton. Meanwhile, there is very real business in Washington that's going to get underway as soon as the new president is sworn in. Republicans are talking about repealing the Affordable Care Act. Republicans are talking about passing legislation that will enable Congress to repeal almost all of President Obama's recent regulations en masse, and they are discussing a raft of legislation on other issues. There's going to be confirmation hearings for President-elect Trump's cabinet. Meanwhile, Democrats also are struggling to prepare some kind of defense to these legislative initiatives, especially since their gutting of procedural rules like the filibuster in the Senate mean most of Trump's nominees will be approved. Barring a national outrage or incident like the Russians hacking the U.S. election, right? Now, Trump has alluded to it. President Bush tried to address it with the creation of a White House umbrella agency called the Office of National Intelligence. And it's something people need to think about for a lot of reasons. Is it time for an overhaul and a complete change of how the United States manages its intelligence effort? And how would you do that? Well, there's a few things to bear, here that we need to point out. First of all, government bureaucracies, we all know this, especially federal bureaucracies, tend to enlarge, become unwieldy, and morph into something completely different as time goes on. Central Intelligence was created from the Office of Strategic Service after World War II. All the OSS was supposed to do at that time was collect and analyze strategic information. The OSS was abolished at the end of World War II, and according to the CIA's websites, its functions were transferred to the State and War Departments. Truman pushed for a post-war centralized intelligence organization. This was done through the National Security Act of 1947, establishing the Central Intelligence Agency. Its responsibility at the beginning was to coordinate the nation's intelligence activities, to correlate, to evaluate, and disseminate intelligence affecting national security, where they sometimes were successful and sometimes were, dangerously incompetent, such as in predicting the attacks on the U.S. in 2001. So in 2004, it was President Bush that created this director of Central Intelligence. They abolished the DCI and the deputy director of Central Intelligence, and they created this position of the director of National Intelligence, which would oversee the intelligence community and the National Counterterrorism Center. This was all in the wake of the 9/11 report that was supposed to fix all this. Now, there are scores of federal intelligence gathering agencies, from each of the military intelligence groups at the Pentagon to many other agencies with various tasks under different umbrellas. It's very important to point out the most simple thing. Don't let the size intimidate you. The U.S. intelligence community, despite the honest or dishonest efforts of its employees, are political organizations. That is, they are funded by Congress, it's very political, and they all work under an umbrella of political authorities who all work for the President of the United States. Now, anyone who served in the military or worked in government in this country knows the phrase, you know what rolls downhill, and it does. Politics is always an important consideration, especially at the higher echelons of leadership in these organizations and in all government organizations. So we have this vast intelligence capability, in which most people would be hard-pressed in Washington or anywhere else to tell you exactly what it does, what they do, given the off-the-book funding for all kinds of black ops, electronic information gathering, psyops, spying, all sorts, interventions of all sorts, all susceptible to the whim of whatever person happens to be president and which party controls the purse strings. So the Bush administration demanded an assessment that Iraq had weapons of mass destruction. Now, there was no smoking gun, but they produced a report that said there was a preponderance of evidence that WMDs existed in Iraq. It didn't matter where bin Laden was. It didn't matter what was going on in Afghanistan. George W. Bush wanted to invade Iraq because he said this, wanted to upset the status quo in the Middle East. The idea was they would pick a country like Iraq that had a history of some form of democratic government, and it would lead the way to a revolution in the Middle East. And we know where we headed after that and whether or not that policy worked. But the CIA helped convince the American people that Bush was right. And many people believed it, including most of Congress. While we're up in arms because the Russians hacked the U.S. election, the United States intervened in the Israeli election recently. It intervened in the Ukraine, in Egypt, across the Middle East. Historically, we have intervened in all kinds of countries, including toppling and killing leaders we didn't like, sometimes, I guess, for good reason, including South Vietnam's Diem, Chile's elected President Allende in 1973. We've intervened in Guatemala and Panama and lots of other countries. One could argue that the United States is at some level of war, actually, with many of our allies and so-called enemies across the globe at any one time. Knowing that the Russians, quote-unquote, hacked the U.S. election also doesn't give us any evidence about what the United States is doing. And having the Russians hack the email of an idiot campaign manager, and I'm sorry, John Podesta, but it's true, is small change compared to something like, oh, I don't know, invading a country, chasing down the president, playing heavy metal music in front of his house until he comes out and surrenders, and putting him in jail for the rest of his life, regardless of the reasons for it. The questions you have to ask yourself as a citizen are the intelligence agencies really just, you know, courtiers serving their kings and queens by saying anything that they're asked to say or to prove anything that they're asked to prove? If the outcome of a U.S. election, however thin, can be trashed afterward by dubious reports issued from the caverns of a secret headquarters, of what value is such intelligence to the actual strategic defense of the United States? And in what service are those reports that we're poring over right now? Who's being served most by those reports? Now, do I know whether the Russians affected the outcome of the election of 2016? It's an unknowable, in the words of Don Rumsfeld. We can't know whether they did or they didn't. They complain about Russia being a potential Russian Manchurian candidate, but what would they have said about Clinton and about her people and about the ties of the Clinton Foundation to pay for play with foreign leaders and for shadowy campaign funding deals and all that stuff? And we also know that Franklin Roosevelt had Soviet agents in his diplomatic corps negotiating really important deals. So my point here is we as citizens are very disconnected from what our government really does, especially in this part of the sector of our our government. Hacked or not, government power is very dangerous. Our founders knew it, and we actually know it well, which is why there is no substitute for an informed and involved populace when it comes to matters of state. What did your congressman do today? What did your senator do today? What about the state legislature and your local city council? Because while I am scanning the unclassified report about what the Russians did, or the classified unclassified report, with all the outrage and the scoffing, President-elect Trump is in fact going to be sworn in, and then the great intelligence apparatus that issued that report will come under his control. What is Trump going to do with that apparatus? Meanwhile, our congressman and state representatives and city councils are robbing us blind and regulating us as though we are Russian peasants. Where's the CIA report on that? Where's the local media reports on that? And this may be one of the reasons why there needs to be a streamlining and restructuring of our intelligence community and what it does. And that is why all this nonsense about the Russians really obscures everything else that's important as everybody rushes to talk about these infractions and these reports, which, as near as I can tell from a cursory reading of the latest classified, unclassified, classified document from the vast intelligence community, is inconclusive and doesn't really provide that much evidence. We need to get back to actually what our government does and what the dangers are to us as citizens, rather than bitching and moaning about Russia Today and what the Russia Today television network is doing. That's going to do it for this week's Bob Davis Podcast Radio Show. Enjoy your reading of the intelligence report this weekend and next week. For all the Bob Davis podcasts, visit the BobDavisPodcasts.com. This is the Bob Davis Podcasts Radio Show. There's no question we're in a news-rich environment, and there's going to be developments with this. I'm not going to say. I have my ideas about where it's going to head. I'll put that in a future podcast, but suffice it to say that there's a lot going on with the release of the administration. What did they call it? The unclassified classified report on the whole Russian, quote-unquote, the whole Russian hack, but we've beat that to death. Now you're up to date on that whole issue. Thanks for listening to Podcast 588, the Bob Davis Podcasts. Don't forget, xgovernmentcars.com is Minnesota's only dealer specializing in one owner, professionally maintained government fleet cars, trucks, and especially SUVs at this time of the year. They have Yukons and they have Expeditions and more. xgovernmentcars.com takes trades and they pay the highest values every day without all the bull. They also have great credit terms. xgovernmentcars.com, now open in Golden Valley at 2420 Nevada Avenue North. Get your butt down to
xgovernmentcars.com.
Again, thanks for listening. I'm going to go upstairs, drink my coffee, and watch Hell on Wheels. Bye-bye.